afternoon, it's 12:40, you have the nation capital minutes aboard. Let's take a moment to introduce our Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Khan, and also our Executive Director, Ms. Anthony. And we'll go ahead and do roll call.
Dr. Rubin?
Yes.
Dr. Scott?
Yes.
Dr. Popio?
Here.
Dr. Calvert?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
We have quorum.
Does anyone have a conflict of interest with the agenda? We have a disability policy. I'll read this briefly. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a disability policy that prohibits any type of disability conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out our business. Those violating this policy, we'll ask you to modify your behavior, and then we'll have you removed from the meeting room. Let's go ahead and begin with number 4A. I'll let board members, if you want to roll through 4A, all the way through up to H, 4H.
Move to set 4, go through H.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. We'll move on to number 5 on our agenda, and we'll take case number 5A. And Dr. Sankey, in your legal representation?
I am Gerald S. Kessler for Dr. Sankey.
Okay.
I provided a written submission on this matter. I hope you've had a chance to look at it.
Okay, case number 19-111. Yeah, whenever it's convenient, can you give us an overview?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this complaint came to the board by way of information supplied by the State of Arizona Department of Health Services, DHS, during an audit performed by DHS in conjunction with the Arizona Pharmacy Board. It was discovered respondents certified 155 patients for medical marijuana between January 1st, 2018 through June 30th of 2018. However, respondent only accessed the Arizona Pharmacy Board database, the PMP, 113 times. Based on the above information, records for 5 patients who were certified by respondent between February 1st, 2018 through April 30th, 2018 were subpoenaed and reviewed. These patients were randomly selected by this investigator. Records for all 5 patients reflect they were seen by Dr. Evan Price, DC, a chiropractor, the same day they presented to respondent and received certification for medical marijuana. No other medical records were included in any of the 5 charts reviewed. For all 5 patients, respondent signed a Department of Health Services marijuana certification form, attesting she had reviewed the patient's profile on the Arizona Board of Pharmacy Controlled Substance Prescription Monitoring Program database. In her medical charts for all 5 patients, respondent initialed she had viewed the PMP prior to her certifying for medical marijuana. For all 5 patient charts, respondent failed to keep a copy in the PMP of the PMP in the file as required by ARS 3215-0131-YY. In an email sent to the board staff dated January 29, 2019, respondent stated, quote, I want to apologize for my lack of checking between January through June 2018. It looks like I didn't check in February, March, and April. Last year, those months, I had some transition of staff, which was extremely stressful and was left to do a lot of the clinical managerial work on my own, and I must have forgotten to check the reports. Although she attested to doing so, respondent failed to check the PMP as evidenced by the audit, her failure to maintain a copy of the PMP in the patient file, and by her own admission. Respondent may have falsified patient records. For all 5 patients, respondent documents an identical heart rate of 50, identical respiration rate of 12, and 4 of the 5 blood pressure readings are identical at 120 over 80, with the exception of one patient she charted as 128 over 80. Respondent may have fallen below the standard of care. when evaluating patients for medical marijuana certification. For all five patients are young, who at the time of certification were between the ages of 21 and 25. Respondent certified all five for severe and chronic pain as a debilitating medical condition. Thank you. Respondent may have fallen below the standard of care when evaluating treatment for chronic pain. Respondent certified all five patients without first ruling out potential conditions requiring additional care by use of appropriate labs and imaging. No lab tests, imaging, or any other diagnostic procedures were ordered or viewed to determine the cause of the severe pain or determine a diagnosis or to rule out trauma or disease requiring additional treatment.
Jessica, are you going to be speaking for her?
I would like to, but Dr. Conkey is available to answer questions as well. This is a case that is not based on patient harm or patient risk. This was referred to the board by the DHS based on the medical marijuana program. Dr. Conkey has acknowledged that it's a difficult time during that six-month span in her practice and that she missed about 25% of those patients who she certified. And then some files were audited and they brought up other issues that we are addressing today. In the interest of prudence and doing the right thing, Dr. Conkey voluntarily discontinued certifying patients pending pending today's hearing and what outcome we come up with. We're not offering that going forward. We don't think that's appropriate. But considering the problems we've put on the table, she's trying to do the right thing, and she has stopped doing certifications. The MMJ program, by nature, is controversial. I'm very much involved in the program. I was involved with many of the dispensaries in the early days. I've educated at the Naturopathic College about how to fill out these forms. I am very deeply in it. To me, the medical marijuana project, a program is a gift from God. It was something I'm passionate about, and it's been a great thing for my practice. But as we look at it, and as I've interacted with physicians, it appears to be a very good thing and a gift for the naturopathic community as well. We're talking about a whole plant medicine that in a time when we're having massive problems in society with opiates. We're talking about something that is not the gateway to opiates, it's the gateway away from opiates. It's the off-ramp from opiate addiction. It's additionally generally frowned upon by the government and insurance companies, and most naturopaths are not working in an insurance-reimbursed setting. So aside from philosophically agreeing with what naturopathic medicine is all about, it's a financial advantage, benefit. It's a financial windfall for naturopaths as well, which helps them in their business. And it also brings exposure to a whole new level of patients who didn't really know naturopaths existed when some of these people now seek to be certified by certified by the medical marijuana program. So to me, it's been a very good thing for naturopaths. But that doesn't mean it's without problems. And it being medical marijuana inherently has some issues. The medical marijuana program is much more about marijuana than it is about medicine. And there's going to be some inherent hypocrisy because of that. Unfortunately, this inherent hypocrisy is in response to over eight decades of misinformation that has been put out by the government and by certain industrial groups, certain pharmaceutical groups, and much of which has been focused at physicians. When I speak to conferences involving doctors, especially older doctors, will say to me, I've heard my whole life that this stuff is poison, that this stuff is awful for you, and now you're coming, people are coming in and telling me it fixes everything. Why should I believe that? And I thought that's a really valid point. And as we look to that point, the stuff is out in society. I mean, you look at the apology from Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who determined not to be the Surgeon General of the United States, who wound up doing a series on CNN about medical marijuana. And his apology was because he helped further that misinformation campaign that was built around marijuana. We looked at the prohibition of marijuana. This was very cynically done in the 1930s by
industrial... I'm not sure this is all relevant to your dissertation here, to the case. Are you
day noting that Mr. Chester to continue, or should we stay focused on what's at hand?
There's an important issue on the question of certification versus prescription, and the way the statute was put together to impact the benefit of doctors. And I was wrong that I wanted to address the issues out of Cohen v. Walters, and I was kind of getting to that, but if you think I'm going too slow, I'll be
done. No, I just think that, you know, I'm newer to the board, but when I came upon the board last summer, there was a horde of MMJ cases that had come through, so I think we're pretty well versed on the background and the issues, and this isn't something new that's graced this board before, so I sort of...
I think the concern is not so much the validity of the medicine, but how we got the prescriptions for the medicine.
And again, prescriptions being an operative origin, and I feel we should all learn a little something today. So I'll avoid the major background discussion on philosophy on this, and really get to the program that we're talking about, which is the medical marijuana program. And that was put through, that came from a voter initiative that came from the Marijuana Policy Project. The Marijuana Policy Project is interested in making marijuana more broadly available. They are not looking to restrict it. They are not deferring to the opiate manufacturers. They are looking to have this become something in society. Now, when medical marijuana started, and there were generational differences, I don't know how much of this has been brought up before, but people under 40 tend to really believe in medical marijuana. In my day, we were not patients. You know, we were hippies, we were hotheads, we were a lot of things, but we weren't patients. In the 1980s, Jack Herrera said that all use of marijuana is medical.
I still don't understand the point. He didn't do what she was supposed to do to deal with her, whether or not we're going to have legalization for recreational use, which I kind of think might be what you're getting to.
No.
We still have a law, and we still have a procedure, and here we go.
Yeah.
And so if somebody holds a license, and they want to utilize that license to, you talked about it's been great for income, for the nation public, and for your business, then I think this is just what's going to help it along.
If you could address the chiropractic,
that's to me that would be
hard with, you know, with Dr. Tomke, with Dr. Price, that would help. And the other thing was, I understand you are in distress, and thus a lot of these things being improperly submitted to the Department of Health Services. So if we could stick to those two issues, that would be great.
To me, the other big issue is the standard of care issue as well. And
correct.
This is not a patient issue. This is not evaluating patients for their health. This is certifying to the state that the patient has jumped through certain groups. And I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Big picture, this is a profession-wide issue. And what we talked about here today has oversight for anything that may be to come or things in the past. And this has been something that's been an issue for the naturopathic board, I believe, even before I was on the board. So I think there's a lot on this.
And agreed, and there are clinics that do nothing but medical marijuana certifications that one might properly call medical marijuana mills, so certification mills. And I wanted to distinguish that is not Dr. Tomke. She knows about those. She's working places like that, so if we have a picture of her practice, her practice is different. That's not what she does.
I was going to ask how many average patients you see on an average week. I'm just curious.
No,
what? It was 113.
150 is 6 months.
Okay.
So is that like 20 to 30 a month?
150
No, it was
150, I think. No. I'm just curious, what percent of your total patient load of this was, those 155 patients? Because you're saying
so it's actually a completely different practice. So it's 100% of the medical marijuana practice that I run. That's completely different than my naturopathic practice. They're not one and the same.
But they are in the same clinic.
They're in the same clinic, but the same address.
Two different business.
Totally two different LLCs, exactly.
But how many patients do you
see? I'd say roughly 5 patients a week, so that's, you know, 20 patients a month.
But how many non-medical marijuana patients?
Oh, that's my private practice. I see, like, you know, 40 patients a month for naturopathic medicine as a primary care physician.
How often are you attending to the medical marijuana practice?
Whenever there's patients, so say one a day, say 5 a week.
Do they call in, but they come to the same place,
you
the same room, the same office?
And I'm the nature of that happens to be done for that.
And that's your practice?
Yes. Okay.
But you're not actively practicing in that practice right now, no prescription.
Correct. I don't. If we get calls, we refer them out.
How does that new patient process work between you and Dr. Price?
It actually, I probably say it's 50-50, 50% of the time we refer them over to Dr. Price if they do not have any sort of pain evaluation, any records, any other physician that's ever seen them. Maybe they don't even have insurance most of the time. So I'll refer some patients out to Dr. Price. Vice versa, he'll send patients to us knowing that, you know, they need a certification that they've seen them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Online, you had mentioned that kind of the qualifications for getting certified that, you know, patient records would always be required.
Right. We always ask.
Sure. I mean, the five cases and five charts that we did, Sabina, none of them had any previous records. So on all of those, we are relying on them seeing Dr. Price, get a diagnosis, and then you're furthering the diagnosis, essentially.
That's exactly.
Confirming the diagnosis, true, to the state. Certify my diagnosis to the state. And this initially came up, this idea that we look at the statute and it says, well, it's the same as medical records are the same as for DOMDs or NMDs. It doesn't say only those. And it is certainly appropriate when you get someone whose chronic pain is based on TMJ that you're going to be looking at dental records. There is now a PTSD segment in the statute. You're going to be looking at psychology records. You're regularly going to look at physical therapy records. There are many primary care practices now rely on certified physician assistants and nurse practitioners. I believe that was a misreading of the statute. You know, and again, your doctors are not lawyers. I mean, we look at the intent of the statute to make this broadly available. And to think that we're going to limit this, that we're not allowed to rely on chiropractors or dentists or psychologists who are defined by statute as entry portals to the healthcare system, to say that we're not going to do that based on the law is just incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue is, or nothing, but that you didn't check and then you look, there's a committed loss by the records, and that's what we're dealing with today. Whether or not the practice and mechanisms, et cetera, I don't think we're digging into that right now. And like you said, we regardless of if it's dental records or chiropractic records, it's still the physician attesting to the diagnosis, confirming it, and then, you know, allowing for the recommendation in your opinion. Despite that, the fact is that you didn't check it, and then you said you did. To me,
I checked the box. Yes, I checked the SPMP.
I feel like we should just hone in on that.
Okay, because it's a big issue, and one of the reasons that she discontinued voluntarily is this chiropractic issue. And I believe the board is free to make a rule that says NMDs don't rely on chiropractic records. I don't think that you're going to get a lawsuit from the chiropractors in that case. But I think you're free to make that rule, but that rule doesn't currently exist. I believe it's an incorrect interpretation of the law to say that legally those chiropractic records are not appropriate for a naturopath to use to certify to the state that in fact somebody has chronic pain.
So Dr. Conte, when a chiropractic patient came in, say this particular chiropractor, did you then go and do your physical exam to reconfirm what he was saying in his exam?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, do you do the vital sign on just your assistant, MA, do it?
I don't have an MA. I don't.
You don't?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
And we can jump into that issue right now because it's an important issue because it's notion of falsifying.
I wanted to ask you, do you agree with his statement that essentially blood pressures could be plus or minus 10 points?
Well, I brought my cup with me today because I wanted you guys to see that between 120 and 130, there was like 5 tick marks. So if it's somewhere in the middle, I'll put 120 over 80. If it's between 120 and 130, because I'm not sitting there, you know, the patient may be interacting with me, so I'm not going to say, oh, let me just remember if it was 122. So I'll just go to 120 over 80. That's just how I do it. If that's wrong, willing to get a digital cuff, no problem. But, okay.
And we
discussed
that, and again,
that would be
appropriate.
I got from school, so this is the way it is. This is what I have. There's enough other medical things that I have purchased, so you know, getting a digital cup is not like the end of my world for sure.
Okay. And not even that, I think just grounding off is probably not the best practice on blood pressures, plus or minus. I mean, if you're going slow enough, you should be plus or minus 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
And I think the concern is that if these patients are in chronic pain, that the blood pressure is pretty valid from the standpoint of pain increasing blood pressure. So I think that is a valid marker that you need to pay attention to. And then I don't think the idea of poo-pooing and saying these are young patients, so, you know, we've expected blood pressure to be in pain. I would also make the argument these are young patients who I have concern over chronic pain diagnoses, particularly the ones that are renewals that have done nothing other than use medical marijuana in the past year for treating chronic pain. Do you have a problem continuing to certify them when they're not really doing anything to actively treat their pain?
I don't. Honestly, I've been certifying since I got approved in Arizona, and this is how I know that it's being done, whether it was at my clinic or someone else's. This is the chiropractic records were the one way we could, you know, work somebody up in the best way possible. Like, if I go send them for MRIs and x-rays and try and work them up, like, they're going to go to the next clinic around the corner, and it doesn't make any sense, to be completely honest. So and a lot of the patients, even if they're young, I mean, they're not the ones looking for a card. You know, I don't get those stereotypical type patients in my office. I get a very wide variety of patients, and I think, you know, that I wouldn't change my mind on certifying these same five patients. Like, they're probably going to see me next year again if I certify.
I'm hearing you that they're going to go elsewhere, but the other point would be is that if you're in your naturopathic clinic, mm-hmm. and somebody comes in pain for unknown origin, essentially just a car wreck or whatever, and a number of these are, you're probably not going to just see them once a year and just give them whatever natural pain relief you want, but you're going to probably work it up, whether you do injections, et cetera. It seems like an easy fix to say, okay, well, if you're going to go somewhere else, I'll give you your card, and then you don't have to do anything else.
There's not a ton of overlap between my medical and my patients.
I'm not saying there should be. I'm saying just from the standpoint of ruling that somebody is requiring some sort of pain management,
sure.
I would want to see somebody doing something proactive in the year between their certifications to get themselves better, not just
other than the main thing they're coming to me for.
Right.
But that's not one of my principles.
Your principle is not treat the cause?
It's definitely not. Not for someone who's trying to seek marijuana as a herbal remedy for their pain. I don't expect them to be now going for chiropractic care. First of all, they don't have insurance. I could probably call all those type patients, and I probably did ask them, hey, do you see a doctor? Do you have any other medical records to, you know, suffice that would make us want to certify you? I asked every single patient, some just don't. And you pick the five, unfortunately, that seem like they all just go through this little mill of Dr. Price, and that's totally not a fair, you know, population of my practice. I did bring some records with some other patients in those same that you checked, and they've got a stack of medical records from, like you said, dentists, physical therapists, other chiropractor, MRIs. I mean, there's like a whole gamut of different things.
Good.
So it just so happens to be I'm not going to lie, there's a population of people, though, who do see Christ, come to us, or see us, Lord Christ. It's just the way it is. And I don't know how else, and that's what I'd really like to clarify today. Myself. I don't know how else to run that kind of, you know, practice otherwise. It's just a confusion, to be completely honest. It's how I've done it from the get-go. So.
Do you put letterhead in?
Go ahead.
I was trying.
Oh, go ahead.
And I am rolling through the records again to refresh. Do you put your letterhead or your clinic name on there, or is it the same new patient,
the same new patient intake.
For the chiropractor and for you?
No, chiropractor has his own set of however he does his email.
And I realized the discussion about utilizing previous records to help determine diagnosis and why we do what was just done, et cetera. But
sure.
I understand that. But if the chiropractor is not obsessive, you're right.
No, I would agree. I'm also not a pain. I'm not a pain doc. You know, I'm not somebody who's gonna.
But you are establishing a diagnosis for chronic pain in order to make a medical marijuana recommendation. I understand that to include that earnestly.
what I was going to say is, you don't even, unless I missed it, make note that you reviewed this records in the show.
I think at the bottom, I don't know if it says it on a different shirt.
So,
pertinent medical records as follows.
If we, anybody on this board doesn't know what that means, don't we just open that chart and looking at your notes? You have no idea whether or not you looked at anything else. It is not documented clearly. I mean, it's not even documented. It's clearly not documented. And so, on this board, we are not assuming anything because that is not protection of the public.
I mean, number two, under assessment qualifying diagnostic plan, the pertinent medical records as follows, I initialed that right there. That's showing that if there are other pertinent medical records,
you can't do that.
Part of their file.
Then you can have us, then it leaves it up to the court or to this board to decide what we consider pertinent medical records. You don't want us to do that. And that is not an officially documented chart, and you just left it in the ambiguity. We need to say what we did, what doctor was, what the date was, if it was a scan that you put it in the note, that's not here. So whether or not your notes outside of using paragraphs rise to the minimum level of care expected by this board or licensee is another thing we need to discuss.
So where would I see that written out that that's how I was supposed to be doing all of the emails? Where would I ever know that that's how it's supposed to be done?
Because you're a licensed physician, and your records are now before us.
Okay.
And so that was something that you were supposed to learn, and
from where?
I don't know. That's what they teach in school. That's minimum level stuff, so maybe you didn't pay attention. I don't know. That's not what I'm deciding today. So that means maybe we need to send you back to church school. That's what you're asking me.
I'm asking as part of the medical marijuana program.
This is minimum level competency in a chart for a physician. We need to talk about it. I'm an oncology doctor, oncology and endocrinology specialist. So I know what a chart looks like. So if you want my answer to your question is in school. But that's not my issue right now. My issue is whether or not you do it. So I don't know whether or not you did or didn't learn it. The question is just what you're doing. You don't have that.
Dr. Tomke, I think what Dr. Rubin is going at, and his point, valid, is if you take in a note, and you can correct me, Dr. Rubin, if you want, if you take in a note, who, the exam was done by chiropractor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, range of motion, lumbar spine, and that you show in your note that you're recognizing that, working through that, do your exam. I mean, you can probably get an exam. We've been doing this for a while. Get an exam done in probably 5 to 10 minutes max. Get your input and button up that chart now. Because if you had to go back a year from now and go into a chart note, you're going to be looking at it just totally perplexed as to where they come from. And, okay, I got precious note here, but what exam did I do? And that's where you're going to have a problem. You just need to be more concise and consistent with your notes. The problem with the Arizona Department of Health Services is, as he was saying, there is a protocol. So you have to, if you can't get that record done properly, then don't go onto the site and submit that. It's going to bounce back. Just hold the chart. Finish the chart, get your stuff ready, and then go and put the data. But do the chart, I think, in the first place correctly.
And then there's a second place where on the actual certified forms you took off have reviewed medical records from whenever. I mean, that's also saying that, yes, I reviewed it.
Yeah. I think the point was that somehow within
it's
your
own... It's not in my own chart.
I got it. Is that what you were...
Thank you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think Dr. Tomke is happy to improve her charting, and I mean, I think that's the benefit of today's, again, hearing what's going on and where our shortcomings may be.
Because the big problem is when we send records out to another practitioner, say the a DO, a family practice DO that, is taking over Eat the Cure, and if he has no clue where you came from, it doesn't look good for anybody within the particular profession. So just be succinct in your charting processes.
One thing to keep in mind is that anything that you use to substantiate a diagnosis needs to be an application. didn't use it according to the note, and the note is all that we have. So, I know this is an initial hearing.
Go ahead. So, I mean, where we're at is where the bottom line comes from is the charting, and then also your failure to access the, you know, the records properly. So,
and then she attempted that she did.
Right.
So,
so I'm going to kind of kick it around with the board as to how you'd like to resolve this. What resolution will I come up with?
Well, we're discussing. Dr. Tanti said that these are unfortunately an unfair representation of the checkouts, and I think we should believe that. And there's no reason not to. Would be a good idea to maybe work with Jen's director to see more of a fair representation of the checkouts, number one, because I want to be able to fairly adjudicate this case. But in terms of the failure to comply with looking at PMG and then testing if that happened, I really want to ask the rest of the board about that, because I know that there's some precedent there. And I think it's great that Dr. Tanti took it upon herself to cease doing an undue certification in the meantime. Do we have a precedent, or has this case come before?
Oh, it's been before. But we don't have precedent on, you know, for a case. We are you looking at a letter of concern with CME? Give me some direction of how the board would like to work through this.
Well, I believe this is an issue. And the more this comes on, the more at risk this profession is. Despite it being wonderful for income, it doesn't matter if we can't do it. And I think we need to pay attention to that, because we have to think not only protection of the public, but profession-wide, and what we do here today, and also what we've done in the past. That's kind of a motion yet.
And if you also want to kind of look at the charts, and you need some sort of a period of time for monitoring that, I think. You mean want to do like, you know, in 6 months, take a look at 5 more random charts and see where things stand with regards to the charting and chart notes and all that stuff.
I think that's fair. I think we you know, me in charge, so I'm
very uncomfortable that it is attempted to have been done and it has not been done.
Which part?
The saying that you've looked at the PMP and you have not.
I mean, you could look at, like I said, I've been certifying since whatever year, 2013, I want to say. Look at any other 6 months, they're checked without even thinking about it, so.
And we acknowledge it was wrong and an oversight, not dishonesty. But I will say that Dr. Tanti reviews drug use with every patient, including the illicit drugs, including street drugs, which are not reflected in the PMP. And that there is no aspect of the DHS program that says what do you do when you see what somebody's records say. Many people who are using opioids are using medical marijuana to reduce their use of opioids, and you expect to see them in the PMP records. But again, there is no guidance, there is no particular thing. I mean, it should bring on a conversation, but those conversations are happening anyway. So in terms of, hey, I agree, like I said, we feel this is oversight, not dishonesty, but agree it's a problem. I don't want to minimize that. But at the same time, it's not a problem that causes patient harm or created patient risk.
I have a question for other members, the doctors on the board, and I don't know how to answer this, but in an oncology practice, you know, cancer is a qualifying diagnosis. I have a pathology report and an automatic qualification if patients are sitting in their field. In terms of pain, does the physician need to generate that diagnosis through their own chart noting, or can they just attest to another chiropractic, for instance, a chiropractic physician who, in terms of the MMJ, is not necessarily a physician? I don't understand how to interpret that. And like oncology, I didn't do the biopsy, but usually the oncologist is the one that then says, primary, you know, you have cancer, so you give the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. If it's more objective findings versus subjective findings.
Well, what I'm saying is that And then if I said, yes, you have cancer, I can see it from here. I'm then getting the attestation that, you know, it's qualifying. That's how you said she is a pain doctor. So where's, I don't understand the continuum there. And if any of you, I was bringing that up in terms of, is that okay? In terms of the, before it's in the chart, how that's in the work.
Which, you know, I think the key points which you'd be looking for would be, is there limited range of motion? Is there, you know, if the patient's on a walker and a cane in their 70s, is probably, you know, an issue. And secondly, if there's any other records besides the chiropractic record, say there was imaging at radiology limiting or whatever group you guys have up here, you know, you can quickly access that off the computer.
And there's no residue.
Yeah, there's none.
So there's ways to do it even if somebody's not a pain.
Quickly, yeah. I mean, because I understand what she's saying is, she's trying to, you know, move through her daily load. But there's ways you can just, even just through your physical exam, determine. And
you have to be assessed.
So you would have to spend a little bit of time. Yeah.
So somebody who's writing an attestation should be at least minimally competent to establish a diagnosis on their own to be able to use that.
Right.
Okay? Well, I think that's reasonable.
Can I make a couple of sense to that? I mean, pain is more often subjective.
Right.
You know, it's experienced by the individual. I get accidents and injuries for a long time. I mean, and I suspect some of you see those in your practice as well. The most honest, not gold-breaking people in the world will hang on to their pain because of their legal case. Long after, you know, the injury is done, they will not let go of that pain. And they're not trying to cheat, they're not dishonest, it's just human nature, it's the way it is. I think you see some of that with the younger people who have really been brought up in the medical marijuana culture as well. They view that pain as something that they need to get them to the certification that they want. They hold on to that, and it is to them at least severe. So subjectively, I mean, I think that again, this is a generational thing. I mean, I see this in people under 40. But I think it's very analogous to what you see in car fare cases, in that people really do embrace and hold on to that pain, and it becomes severe and chronic, at least for them. And how you document that, when somebody goes to another doctor and says, this hurts, and they confirm it, and they say, this gives me trouble every day, and it bothers me every day of my life, I would say, well, no, it doesn't, because I can't prove it somewhere else. I just don't think that's an appropriate way to
work. Right, I'm looking at the chart notes, too. There are other mechanisms besides MMJ. And, I mean, we're classically trained in that in terms of having a compendium of medicines to be able to use. Physical medicine, dietary medicine. I don't see any questions about anything else about priming or potentially resist other than the gym. And so you're talking to a group of physicians. You are not a physician. I'm not an attorney. I don't know how to look at it critically, but I do know how to break down a case. And my father was an attorney, spent a lot of time in the legal world. I'm going to go to law school. So
I agree with that.
I'm a philosophy major. I'm sort of designed to argue. And every day that I write protocol, I believe that it is an argument for the case of how I'm going to help get somebody better. So for me, it's sort of a legal argument, if you will, but it's not as cut and dry. The point is that there are certain things that we have for minimal competency for this board to maintain a licensure. And that is something that, unfortunately, has risen to the top of this case, in my opinion. Not to mention that you made a mistake, and you really did, in my opinion, and you still also have the record. That's what it looks like. Regardless of being sorry about it, it still happened, and this board protects the public and maintains licensure, and we are responsible for all of them. And I think we need to move this to the next step, because I don't think that we're able to decide on everything we want to do today. That's my opinion, so.
Are you saying that I falsified the record of checking off the CSPMP box? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I discussed it with you. Okay.
It is what it is. You know, that's the, unfortunately, in a legal world, that we're looking at what can you prove and what can't you prove.
Right.
No ambiguity. correct?
Absolutely. Okay, thank you. Again, acknowledge
And we know
that. I acknowledge that. I called Gail immediately.
So we have a responsibility to do something.
No, I agree. I called Gail and I told her. There's a check on it. But back in 2018, June to December, there you go. They're all checked. So there was obviously some reason that didn't happen.
We still got 6 months.
Mr. Ruby, do you want to make a motion then?
I don't know what motion to make, any help.
Consent agreement for a set of reprimand and CME, is that what we're aiming for? Or is that more than, or is it more like a consent agreement, the letter of consent? And the consent agreement is to reduce our consent?
I don't think we can have a consent agreement in an informal hearing today.
We've got essentially a letter of concern, which just says they were concerned with this, but doesn't require any action. You've got a consent agreement that could require CMEs plus a certain amount of time not certifying for medical marijuana.
Well, I think there's an ethics violation here, potentially. Well, not just there is. You know, the falsification could be trust for doctors to put the truth down on record, whether it be blood pressure or pneumonia, it's unacceptable. Or you're checking a box to get somebody through to the DMV because you didn't have time. Either way, I have two concerns. One is minimum level of training. I do like the idea of moving this room, looking at 6 months and getting 5 representatives there. I think that's fair. Whether or not we want to decide if we should ever take CME for training. Her roundabout admission, she never learned it. So it would be a good idea, and I think that it would be fortunate for the doctor to have us impose it upon her, so she didn't, and it would be a good idea if she didn't give her.
Learn what?
For non-disciplinary action for a CME, she would go learn how to chart more appropriately. On the other hand, is the issue of compliance and ethics in charting. And I believe that there's a CME for that. I'm just wondering if you guys are familiar with cases where this has been an issue, where DMV wasn't checked, and also was attested to where disciplinary action was or wasn't taken. I don't know, we're going to need to, talk to our Attorney General about that.
We can't bring anything from that. That's a special,
right? You need to make your decision based on this case regarding it.
Do you want
legal advice?
Yeah, I think
you want executive session
for
legal advice?
We should.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye. All right, you guys can go ahead and have a seat back there. We shall return. It is 1:23. We're going into executive session.